I'd like to begin now and with the first question. Maybe I, before I go into the first question, I would like to make a, I would like to just say something which is stated in those three pages, which I like to just verbalize because it's so terribly important. No person can be interviewed under stress. So I would like to point out to you that it is vitally important that to the degree that the individual feels comfortable, reassured, and non-threatened, to the same degree you will have cooperation and will get the straight poop. A person, come in, a person who is under stress will, is automatically going into a defensive position and cannot be interviewed. So please understand that all the questions, regardless of how you phrase them, must be reassuring and non-threatening. And some of them are very tough, and to the extent that they are tough, you must be even more careful not to make the person uncomfortable. Also, I would like to tell you that it is important that you realize that the way I phrase the question is not necessarily you should phrase the question, because I phrase it the way I feel comfortable. You will phrase it the way you feel comfortable. The basic rule is that if you are not comfortable, the candidate will not be comfortable, and you cannot interview an uncomfortable candidate. Okay, let's go. Also, I would like to make one more suggestion, and I would like to see hands of those people who object to the following suggestion. I don't know that we're going to get all 20 in, and I really would love to do that, because you will benefit from them. I will give you the question and the background. I will first give you the concept and then the question. And then we maybe we can restrict it to two questions. I entertain two questions. If there's a third person or fourth person who wants to ask questions, just circle the question and we'll do it later on towards the end of the session. I just want to get through. Is there anybody who objects to that? I don't want to have a problem later on with the rating thing, God forbid. What have you been criticized for during the last 4 years? Ladies and gentlemen, it is very important to inquire as to the perception of the candidate, what he or she did wrong. In other words, most people have difficulty in answering that because that's what they really would not like you to know. A candidate is always an individual who would like to and is entitled to put his best foot forward. So to answer the question as to what have you been criticized for is something we would rather not talk about. Therefore, if you just, for instance, go ahead and say what have you been criticized for, that could create stress. So I'd like you to say something to the effect, we all at times move. By the way, it is a general stress reduction philosophy if you include yourself, if you don't say what about you. And you say we all have sometimes been criticized for something. What other kind of things? Give me three or four things which you have been criticized for during the last few years. What are these things? It is very interesting to listen carefully what that person will admit to. That's number one. Maybe you want to write just down the word, what will he admit to? And incidentally, I would be most careful about an individual who admits to nothing, because that doesn't really exist. The next question is directly related to that, and that is, did you agree? Or did you disagree? That's an important question, and I'll tell you why. A person who agrees with the criticism is leading you into his or her area of weakness. Because that is an area. He says, yes, I have been doing this and that, and I have been criticized for that, and I am not so good in that. You remember, those of you who have been in my previous classes, interviewing is the ability to determine the strength and the weaknesses of an individual. And incidentally, the weaknesses of an individual are potentially more important to identify correctly than the strength. For a variety of reasons. Yes, sir. Yes. Yes, that's right.
With himself?
That's right.
Right.
You see, when he agrees, then he has said to you, in that area, I am subject to criticism, which will give you a clue to where he's not so good. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been criticized. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
I'm just wondering about the priority of asking questions, and it seems to me you started out with some fairly strong ones. Do you mean this to be the priority?
No. I'm glad you asked that. No, that's really, and you use, do it the way you're comfortable. But you will never use all those questions. Use those which you think are terrific and work for you. What works for you is good. What doesn't work for you is not good. So I have just taken at random. What needs do you expect to satisfy by accepting this position? I would like to explain to you the concept of that. And those of you who were in my class yesterday will just have to hear this once more. Every human being, without exception, is satisfying needs. As a matter of fact, everything we do in life is satisfying needs. Everything. From the beginning, when we are born, a baby satisfies needs by coughing, getting the lungs clear, otherwise the baby can't live. Until we go 6 feet under, everything we do is satisfying needs. Now, by the way, when you must understand that there are two kinds of needs we satisfy. One of them are healthy needs, the other ones are unhealthy needs. Or in psychology we refer to that as neurotic needs. Healthy needs are satisfiable. Unhealthy needs cannot be satisfied, ever. They are not satisfied. Neurotic needs are also simply self-destructive needs, cannot be satisfied. And I will give you in a moment a list of some unhealthy needs so you can you get a drift of what they are. But the point of this question is that when you listen carefully, you are actually saying to the candidate, why do you want that job? If the candidate says, identifies a need, he wants to satisfy a need which is not satisfiable in your job, in your company, be careful you not take that person, because you will have a perennially dissatisfied person. If the candidate states a reason which is an unsatisfiable, a neurotic need, surely you don't want that person, because that person will never be satisfied in you or any other company. So what I'm saying is, if you understand that correctly, it's a very potent question. Always know, in any whether you are selecting a president or a porter, in any job, why do you want that? Why is it that you want that join that company? Well, if the person says, I need a job, that's a different issue. You can then say, but why that? Why here? Why? What turns you on about that job? You must understand what needs the individual wishes to satisfy, and whether this is a satisfiable need, and if it is, can it be satisfied in your position? I'd like to give you a short rundown of what are neurotic needs which can never be satisfied. There are others, but I'll just give you a few. Just write them down, and then you can recognize other neurotic needs. Neurotic needs are need for perfection, need to be loved by employees, need to show off, need to brag, need for absolute truth, need to set unattainable goals for oneself and others, need to overexert, need to overeat. I'm one of them, by the way. I have terrible self-control about that. And need for one-upmanship. All neurotic needs. Cannot be satisfied. Any question about that? Yes.
Did everybody hear this?
Okay. This was not part of the program, but that's an interesting something interesting I want to share with you. Anybody? Note taking in an interview is a threatening procedure for a variety of not rational but emotional reasons. I will give you the reasons now. On the other hand, you cannot take. You cannot conduct an interview which has predictive qualities and make a successful decision without taking notes. I'll tell, give you the reasons now why note-taking is threatening, and then I give you the solution to the problem. There's one reason is that the candidate knows that you're taking down something important, because if it wouldn't be important, then you wouldn't take it down. Number two, the person knows that you're taking down something important, but he or she is not supposed to know that. Which incidentally, some people hide by going on and saying like this, hold it, moment. The third one is that the candidate knows that what you are taking down may or may not make or break the interview. And the fourth thing is the most potent of all. And that is the candidate knows that he is completely helpless what you're doing. And whenever a human being is helpless, they are in an anxiety, high anxiety producing state. Having said that, and I also having said that you must take notes, you cannot take, if you take a conduct an interview using the techniques which some of them have discussed with you, on asking questions like that, you have to take notes. What you do is simply ask permission. Even though it doesn't make sense, you say to the individual, listen, my memory isn't all that good. You see, I'm again speaking against myself. I'm saying, tearing down myself. Listen, my memory isn't so good. Would you mind if I take a couple of notes? What is he going to say? He says, sure, go right ahead. Sure, I don't mind that. Go right ahead. The fact that from an unconscious and emotional viewpoint that the individual has given permission will reduce or eliminate the tension. By the way, that reminds me of an incident a few years ago when I said, like I do in every interview, I say, can I take a couple of notes? Do you mind if I take a couple of notes? The person says, no, not at all, doesn't bother me, as long as I can see those notes later on. And another one said to me, no, it doesn't bother me at all, as long as you give me a piece of paper and I'll take some notes about you. Man, did I get tense, you wouldn't believe it. I was dying to know what he said about me in those notes. But that's very rare. Ask permission, people say go right ahead, and you will find it, it won't become a threatening procedure. There is no absolute truth. Whenever you set up an objective in life which is unattainable, such as a perfect marriage, have you listened to Dr. Stern, who explained that so well? There is no perfect marriage. There's nothing perfect in life, and there's no absolute truth. So therefore, if you expect absolute truth, then you will be disappointed because there's no such thing. And the need for that is unattainable or is an unsatisfying need, yes?
What about the need
to overexert?
Yes.
No, that is the need to overexert, to exhaust yourself, to drive you to the very last mile, is a self-defeating because it is not good for you. And it has very emotionally disturbed tendencies. Because you are making yourself tired beyond limitation. That's what that means. The need for that. If you do it coincidentally, it's a different issue. But the need to set it up that way, that can never be satisfied. Where would you like to be in 3 and 5 years? 3 or 5 years, whatever it is, or 5 or 10 years, you choose that yourself. You amend these questions anywhere you want, anyway. First of all, the answer to that, if you listen carefully, will indicate whether the individual is a planful person. Whether the individual is a planful person. That is related to the fact that planful people are usually intellectually gifted people. And the intellectual acuity of an individual is important to know for a number of other reasons, which I will explain to you later on. Dumb people don't plan. That's number one. It will indicate to you a second issue which you should know about it. Does he care or does she care where she is? Because the individual who hasn't got the vaguest idea may not even be interested to identify where do I want to be in 3 or 5 years. And that, of course, brings up all kinds of other questions. And by the way, for those of you who haven't heard me before, every single question you ask will be followed up with one thing, which is
why.
Always. Why is the most potent of all interviewing questions, especially when we use the rolling why? I would like to give you the basic concept of that. That when you answer a question, and I'm going to show this to you with this question, the answer, the first response to a question is what we call a programmed answer. That is an answer which is at the tip of our tongue. And that's really not the one you want to know. What you really want to know is the spontaneous one. And that will be flushed out by asking why. He says, well, I like to be, in 5 years, I like to be running this department. Now, you see, it isn't, you're not sure whether this wasn't a glib or a programmed answer. And therefore, you go beyond the obvious by saying, why would you want to do that? That cannot be programmed. Let's talk about why. What need do you wish to satisfy by wanting to run that department? Then we will see whether that was just a flip or flip answer, or whether the person has a plan. And furthermore, now comes the, I want to show you how you want to go beyond the obvious. The next question is, number 5, how do you expect to get there? You see, the individual can say, well, I like, where do you want to be in 5 years? I like to have your job. Big deal. So now he has he's got rid of that. How do you expect to get there? In other words, what you're saying is, have you got a plan? And if you do, let's share it. I want to hear that. What plan have you got? Because the key to the whole thing is, let's ask good question and not be satisfied with glib or flip answers. Let's get beyond the obvious. We'll see as we go along how easy that is. Number 6, when do you think you have arrived? I'd like to tell you that this is not as fancy a question as it sounds. In other words, you are now inquiring into the definition of the individual of success. In other words, you want to know, what does this person think in his or her mind about success? What is success? And I think you should know that. Okay. Let me give you several possibilities as to what the definition of success is. One of them is very clear. When I can collect Social Security, I think I have arrived. That's his or her success. Well, I don't have to explain to you what your reaction to that should be, or I know what my reaction to that would be. Number 2 possibility is when I am the president of that company. And, of course, that, again, may be a very flip statement. So what you're saying is this, how do you expect to get there? What do you want to achieve in life? That's what this is. When do you think you have arrived? Again, let me give you another one, which is, I think, the most important one of all. There are people who say, I never arrive. I will never arrive. And I would like to explain those people to you. When a person says, I will never arrive, I will never be satisfied, I will never be there, I will never let off, these are the people who are constantly chafing at the bit. And they are what we call compulsive achievers. They are not people who want to succeed, they are people who are driven to succeed. And anything which is compulsive is neurotic. And I would like to point out to you that such people are a short-term asset and a long-term liability. They, on the short term, they perform rather well and sometimes rather significantly. In the long run, in the long term, they are difficult to have around. They cause morale and attitude problems, and also they are difficult to manage. These are the people who will never permit themselves to arrive. They will never allow themselves to be satisfied. Number 7, if you had to choose a career again and had to make a different decision, what would you choose? I think we would like to know whether the person is satisfied in his or her role. That is a very important consideration for the personality constellation of an individual. Are you satisfied the way you are? And I would like to tell you from 28 years of practice, I have interviewed hundreds of people who have said, I would do that differently. I wouldn't do that. And that has to do with the fact that statistics have shown that slightly over 10%, listen to this, slightly over 10% of all people go into a certain kind of profession because they have chosen it. Usually, we are driven into it by the father, by the mother, by circumstances, by having to get a job, by all kinds of extraneous circumstances which are unrelated to the individual's achievement patterns, interest patterns, or many other things which are necessary in order to be satisfied and successful in a job. Very few people go choose a career in the planned for way. They usually we stumble into it. When you look about your own career, that of your spouse or people in your family, you will see what enormous influence the exterior world, the other people had in for you to choose your career, which has nothing to do with your interests or your preferences or your personality at all. And you would like to know that, because if the person would say, well, listen, I'm a controller now, but I'll tell you the truth, if I had to do it again, I wouldn't do that. Draw your own conclusion. I would then follow up and say, how much more satisfaction would you get from this than from that? Explore it. See what it is all about. And if you really find that the person is just there because, well, now it's too late to change, I would be careful. If you have a choice, I wouldn't take that person. Yes.
The other question in the step is kind of like you're requiring an answer
in
a different
field. Really? I don't read that into it. If you have to choose a career again,
you have to make a different decision.
I have to make a different decision. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I could phrase it differently. Yeah, why did you do it? Say, would you make a different decision would be better. Who said that?
Yeah,
very good.
That's a different point.
Yeah. Very good. It is important that you understand the interests and the interest patterns and the personality of the individual. I'd like to just briefly share with you that over 87% of all people failing on a job fail because of personality and not capability. So I would like to point out to you that it is far more important that you know about the individual's personality than his capability. And that's why most of the questions which you will hear, which we are discussing now, have to do with personality. That is one of them. Pardon? Over 87% of people. Number 8, describe the most and least ideal boss you could choose. I would like to just give you the concept of that, then you can do this anywhere you want. For instance, you could also say, what are the kind of people, which is exactly the same kind of question, points at the same direction, and I want to give you an opportunity to change the question so you will be comfortable with them. What is the most ideal boss? Describe to me the most ideal boss. And see what kind of boss he thinks is ideal. And then, of course, even more importantly, what kind of boss he wouldn't want to work for, which is the least ideal boss. Because if the person he works for is like his the least ideal boss, you have another clue. What is the most? What kind of boss do you really enjoy? Well, if he works for you, say, am I that guy? Do I fit that bill? Let's suppose you are the one who is least. Let's suppose he says an individual who is highly structured. I enjoy somebody who is highly structured. And you say, oh my God, not me, that's not me. Well, of course, you don't want that person. And there's another thing I want to tell you. Many managers make the mistake by saying, I'm going to change him. I don't like that guy so much. He's a little arrogant, this and that, but I'm going to change him. You just wait. I take care of him, I size him down, he comes on the job, and I change him. And I would like to point out to you that the basic human personality is developed between 8 and 18. And except through psychotherapeutic intervention cannot be changed. Please don't be a armchair psychologist. Remember that what you see in the interview is the very best. And that's the way, what you see is what you get. They are very There are not many variations later on. And by the way, if there are variations later on, it's usually that it goes rapidly downhill. It's not going to get better. You see the person at the very best of the interview. So don't change them, or don't try it. Because you're setting up a feeling situation. And incidentally, let me give you another question which is directly related to that. For instance, you could say, describe to me the person whom you like to spend a weekend with. And describe to me the person you wouldn't want to spend a weekend with. It was the same thing. In other words, what you are hearing now is what kind of people does he can easily identify with, and what people he cannot identify with. And the third thing that you're learning is that usually, I think you could almost say almost everything, every time, the person he describes, he can identify with, is himself. That's people usually, with very few exceptions, identify with what they think of them, or what they think and what they are themselves. What better self-descriptions could you get? 9. Can you lie? And if so, when would you? I discussed this, in my last session, but I will just explain that to you briefly. All people lie. That's a very strong statement, but I'll prove it to you quickly by just saying, would the person in this room who doesn't lie now lie, please? All right, we have established that, so now we are saying... So we are, and we all lie on occasion. There's no such thing as not, and by the way, and should. I frequently say, in a very shocking way, as I usually do, I say, the person who goes through life always telling the truth is an insensitive slob. We cannot go through life and be self-respecting and respectful to other people by always blurring out the truth, for sure. So now, therefore, having established that on occasion we all lie, it is important that you identify the standards of morality, honesty, and ethics of the individual. Because if the standards of morality, honesty, and ethics of the individual are conflicting with yours, whatever they are, you are setting yourself up for a severe problem. And I can tell you that cannot work out. There's no way that this could work out. If the individual standards of morality, honesty, and ethics are conflicting with yours, are not compatible with yours, the employment, regardless of what that person can do in terms of capability or other personality traits, it will not work out. So therefore, when you say, can you lie, if the person says no, then we know he's a liar. If the person says yes, then we say, when would you? And I want you to know, by the way, I'll tell you what people will say. They don't say yes or no. But the idea here is that the person says yes, you say, when do you think it's okay? And you don't have to be a psychologist to recognize immediately, is this acceptable to you or not? If the person says, well, hey, I would lie and be able to do this and that, and you say, that's what you would do? Or you think that's what you would do? Oh, my God, am I great? I asked that question out. I couldn't deal with that. Or you say, of course, we all do that. Everybody would do that.
How often do you get a response?
Well, I'll tell you what I would say. This is the concept. Now I would like to give you what I would say and what the answer is. I would say, you know, there are situations sometimes in business and in our private life that it isn't all that good to come out and tell the truth. You know, where we have to fudge a little bit. I always say we, include yourself, to reduce stress. We fudge a little bit. Can you do that? I mean, could you fudge that a little bit? Can you lie? Can you say something which isn't entirely true?
So then people will say to you,
that's the standard answer. Oh, of course I could, but I would rather not. That's what people say. Oh, of course I could, but I would rather not. And then you say, maybe you could relate to me like two or three occasions during the last 5 years when you thought it was okay. Don't say, when would you? He says, talk to me about when it was okay. And then listen carefully. Then he thought it's okay. Well, let's see whether you think that's okay. By the way, last time I asked that question, just about a week or 10 days ago, and I said, can you lie? And the person said, yeah, of course, I can lie, but I would rather not. And I said, why not? And the person says, because my memory isn't any good. What do you think my decision was? That's the person who says, I don't mind lying at all. That standard of morality is totally unacceptable to me. You see, that's the person who says, I wouldn't mind lying at all, but my noodle isn't working along. I can't remember the stuff. That's why I'm not lying. Not for ethical or morality reasons. Next one. 10. What activities in your position do you enjoy most? And then the next one is least. Ladies and gentlemen, this is sounds like a very simple question, but this is one of the most potent you'll learn today. Interviewing is the ability to determine an individual's strengths and weaknesses. Interviewing is the ability to determine what speaks for and against it, which is for is the strength and against is the weakness. What an individual enjoys doing refers to his area of strength. He is now helping you to identify him, his strength. And what an individual does not enjoy doing, he or she is not likely to develop strength in. That's why we want to ask that question. And I want to point out to you that you may say, well, what if I'm interviewed and that person also was taught by Kurt Einstein's personnel selection training and heard all that and knows it as well as I do? What then? It doesn't make any difference, because if you always ask following up with one question, which is why? Because if you say, what is it that you enjoy most? He says, well, I enjoy most. Oh, let's talk about that. Why is that so enjoyable to you? That cannot be programmed without you noticing it. No way. Nobody could do that. Or whatever things which really turn you off, they are not very good for you. And then he says, well, I'll tell you, one thing I really don't want to do is work with figures, do paperwork. Oh, tell me a little bit more about it. Why is that turning you off? You know, let's talk about it. Is that really very bad? Or what irritates you about that? Always ask why. Most potent question of all. Number 12. How would you describe yourself with 3 adjectives? In 99% of the time, I have experienced that people will describe themselves with 3 positive adjectives, because people like to describe themselves in positive terms. And you do, and you let that go, you let that pass, because this is what the individual wants you to know.